Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million, if I had
Hello, folks. Thanks, Jackson Jacks. Tom Holly, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 37.50. That's 37.50. Dow futures down 127. The big mover is NASDAQ down 250. Yeah, 250, that's 1.7%. The big news this morning is a 10-year yield over 1.5% as the bonds continue to slide. Oil continues to go up. Gold goes down because interest rates. Very, very strange world we're in, but Brendan, how are you? You can explain it all to us.
Well, I think it's all because of the offensive line of the Bears. It's throwing the market into turmoil. And I heard a rumor that you're going to try out, that you got an offer to go out to the Bears just to be their new left tackle.
Well, did you watch Dallas last night that actually has an offensive line and how much easier it is for the quarterback?
I did not see the game last night, no.
Well, they have when they're all together, last year they had a bunch of injury problems. When they're all together, they're real solid. And they're moving guys out of the middle. All of a sudden, hey, all the screens worked. Hey, all of a sudden, the play action worked. Duh! Right? I mean...
Well, that's one of the differences, because even when the Bears line is fully together, they're still not any good.
No, well, there's no number one pick. I mean, like I said yesterday, that the... when Cleveland... Matty, where do you get the... What station does it at the beginning of the game where they... Of course, who does the ratings? Who the hell knows? Everybody rates everybody now. The hangers-on have never been as big as they are now, huh, Brennan? It's like when you and I went to the park to play, you basically strapped them on and played. You didn't have to have a bunch of people
yep.
talking about it or writing about it or anything else. Well, now, how many people do you think make their living in sports over the amount of people that actually play sports? Do you think it's 100 to 1? 200 to 1?
Probably closer to 200 to 1. It seems like every station has a whole stable full of people who do nothing but talk about it. Kind of like we do on the radio.
Well, sort of, except we don't do it 24/7, and
that's true.
And dig up every crazy story. But the trick is, you got to keep talking about it without ever. And that's the beauty of CNBC. I mean, that's the interesting part is people say, "Geez, Stocks and Jacks." I said, "There's like no difference between sports and business in a way, because they both mm-hmm. involve people, right? And people are the same,
right?
Pretty much everywhere, but the." If you ever watch, matter of fact, Dr. J had a party one night, and I was invited, and I go over, and I'm talking to one of the producers on CNBC, and this is back roughly around the 2007-2008 fiasco, and he says, well, how come you don't want to come on the show anymore? And I said, well, you know, the last couple of times, I pretty much had to get dressed up. It's after the market opens, so then I'm doing stuff for people. You know, I got to schlump down the block and, get some makeup on, like if that helped. I sit there in his room. I don't even know where the camera is, so I look like Snidely Whiplash, my eyes darting all over the place. I said, plus, last time I was on, I counted 22 guests in that two-hour show or three-hour show. I said, you didn't need me for the three words I said. I mean, what's the point? He goes, well, I said, you never let anybody explain anything. You ask them a question, you cut them right off. And he said, well, that's how we save the show. And I'm like, how does that save the show? Of course, I'm talking like radio guy, not... a TV guy as well. You never actually want people to explain the whole thing. You just want a different set of guests, and you go over the same thing over and over all day long. But you never actually want to run it to ground where somebody explains, you know, the whole... I mean, how many... I was talking to some people this weekend. Of course, everybody's got an opinion on the Haitian situation and the Border Patrol people and everything, depending on what side you are on and so forth. But can anybody explain to me, including myself, because I can't. I have not seen anything. And, of course, I haven't... I haven't really dug for it. You know, maybe Maddie or you know, I have no idea what the problem is with these people, where they came from, who got them there. How could you have thousands of people that somehow mysteriously appear off an island? I mean, they didn't swim. Does anybody have any idea what the actual history of this whole mess is, yet everybody's got an opinion about it?
Well, from what I understand is a couple of years ago when there was a lot of trouble in Haiti, even before the earthquake happened, many of them migrated to South America, to Colombia and places like that, and have come up from Colombia over the last couple of weeks, several weeks to a month or two.
Right, so how do they...
So a lot of them have not come from the island of Haiti right now. They've gone someplace else before going up to the United States.
All right, that's a hell of a lot of movement through areas that are totally jungle, but people have no money. How does all that happen?
Mm-hmm.
This is where you used to be able to pick up your Time magazine or your Newsweek and see somebody with a serious award-winning article in the middle that's 15 pages long with maps showing the dates and everybody moved, how they got there, who paid them, and actually learn about something. Can you do that anymore?
I don't know where that exists anymore. I don't think there's any news source, either television or print, that devotes the resources that would allow somebody to do that kind of investigative reporting.
Well, all I know is in your lifetime, as in mine, have you ever heard a story from Haiti that wasn't some god-awful thing of some goofball running the place and people totally in poverty and they never managed to get out of it and nobody's got anything there, much less ship stewage fare to go to Colombia? And how do you get from Colombia to our border? I mean, you can't walk over the Panama Canal.
Well, they do walk. Many of them do walk a large part of that distance, if not the whole thing.
Well, you can't walk from Colombia. I mean, maybe walk from Guatemala, but you got to. Is there a bridge over the Panama Canal? I don't know. There must be, I guess.
I don't know.
I'm saying with it, it's amazing how people have opinions on stuff that, let's just say, their depth of knowledge on the subject are a little low. Because I can't have an opinion on it. I don't know enough about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yet I'm supposed to have an opinion. I'm supposed to be right or left, right?
Well, you can have an opinion whether you're right, left, or center.
Well, it's true, but you're supposed
but
to.
I agree with you that no matter how the opinion is based, or what your opinion is, that it should be based in fact. There should be some underlying facts that lead you to your opinion.
Well, I have a article up here. One of these days, I'm going to find is actually clean my place out here. We had to do with because there's so much news and so much crap going on, Brennan. People have essentially offloaded their thinking. That you let the left think for you if you're on the left, or you let the right think for you. And whatever side, somebody could drop something in there, but whether you like the new Cubs first baseman or not, and if the left hates him and the right likes him, and you're on the right, you like him. You don't ever like watch him yourself and see whether you like him.
What was that called? A groupthink? A group speak from 1984?
Yeah, something like that, yeah. But it has...
The history keeps getting rewritten by those who are in power, and unfortunately, we swing back and forth. That it's kind of a polarized camp right now, where the source of your news is either far right or far left, and no real factual basis in the middle.
Well, and the thrust of this article was actually people don't have the time to dig through all these issues themselves, so they align themselves with people they think are like thinking, And if they essentially form an opinion first, like if you think the people on the right are where you should be, then whatever their side of the story is, then that's what you should take. But I mean, you can see it in Congress. I mean, we're on the Supreme Court. I mean, it shouldn't be 5-4. It shouldn't be all Democrats, all Republicans. You would think that somebody on one side or the other would say, hey, this bill's not so bad. Or do you think, there's a lot of debate this weekend of people I was with, Brendan, I was going to ask you about it. When did, in terms of time or whenever, decade or something, we used to have Senator Matt Murphy on once in a while before he quit. And Matty, didn't he used to tell us that in the state legislature they have a practice, I won't say a rule because they probably could change it, that it's with one subject, one bill or something like that?
Yeah, that's true. That you can't combine a whole bunch of different things into a bill because then you obfuscate the reason for some type of legislation. And the theory behind that is that something that's really controversial gets incorporated into a bill that's something that is really essential, that nobody could vote against, and the other, the controversial bill gets passed because it's attached to the one that nobody wants to vote against. And there are rules in the state of Illinois that you can't have a multi-purpose bill.
But no,
it's supposed to be single purpose.
Now, when you say rules, Brennan, and we've seen rules change in Congress, the Senate, regarding filibusters. When you say an Illinois rule, if all of a sudden all Republicans or all Democrats got in on both sides, that's not in the Constitution. That's just a rule they could change tomorrow if they felt like it, right?
There are court cases. I don't remember the. I can't point you to a statute or anything, but bills have been declared unconstitutional because of being multi-purpose in their effect in Illinois.
So that
is something that Matt Murphy was correct about. You can't combine a tax bill with a prohibition on owning guns in the state of Illinois. I'm picking two examples just kind of off the top of my head.
Right.
You can't combine two things like that because they need a single purpose.
But it sounds like from the way you're describing it, that it's in the Constitution in some way, shape, or form.
I don't remember, honestly. I don't remember where it is.
Well, the flip side is, on the federal part, every bill is 10,000 pages long, it seems, and there's all kinds of crap, and there has nothing to do with anything they're talking about. I mean, my Republican mm-hmm. friends this weekend are talking about this infrastructure bill being 25% infrastructure, and the rest just God knows
mm-hmm.
what. I mean, are there things just waiting around for any old bill, and they only pass like, you know, two a month or two a year, and it's got to be in that bill or what?
It's getting to the point now where very little legislation is passed either in Illinois or in the federal government because they're at such loggerheads. For example, the reconciliation process allows the bills to pass in the Senate with a simple majority instead of a 60% vote, at least on procedural matters. And so the way around that is to tack legislation into a bill that can be passed through the reconciliation process on a majority basis instead of having a filibuster vote.
Well, that's it seems so. But don't these guys understand that the Congress flips like every 3 or 4 years, and whatever they do to the other side, they end up doing themselves?
Well, see, that's you're right. That's exactly the problem. And if it goes completely, but think about what you just said a few minutes ago when you were talking about everybody in lockstep because they're a Democrat or Republican party. And I mean, do you really think that there are every single Republican who doesn't want to increase the debt limit or keep the government running after October 1st, or some Democrats, maybe Joe Manchin, for example, who doesn't think that that's the right course of action for different reasons? And yet you're seeing a 50-50 alignment. You're not seeing them really articulate that. Just like a few years ago, I found it really hard to believe that every single Republican was against the principles and legislation in Obamacare because it helped some of the people in their state. Yet they aligned in such a way that if you're a Republican, you're against Obamacare. If you're a Democrat, you're for Obamacare. It just doesn't make sense to me that those alignments would hold on every single major bill.
Well, Brian, what it seems to me, I mean, and this might be very, very, I don't know, accusatory, but everybody I talk to, I constantly say, you know, if you're on the right, okay, you can feel this way all you want. And if you're on the left, you can be woke, you can be all this other kind of stuff, all you want. Simple fact is, while you idiots are fighting, people are taking control of everything. There really can't be. I mean, the people who were on, the Obamacare, it benefited these drug companies and these hospitals to such a dramatic extent. The people who are voting no are also getting paid by the drug companies and hospital groups. I mean, how do they get away with voting no? Is it one of these routines where you can vote no as long as you don't actually oppose the thing? I mean, there's a difference between voting no and, I mean, when I was on the board of the SIBO and something came by that I didn't like, this is why I think on a personal level I was liked pretty much, But on a board level, I mean, they hated me. Because I didn't just, if it was, you know, 12 to 1, I just didn't go out and grab a drink and say, I lobbed you my no vote. That's my job, knowing I was totally ineffective. I would actually drag people with me to the bar and say, here's why I voted no, and here's why you guys maybe should think again. So the next time, maybe the next week, the vote would be 8 to 4, and there'd be a little something happening. I mean, you're not, I mean, in their mind, you weren't supposed to do that because the right side won, right? But, I mean, go in there and lob a vote, that's why one of the guys from, Reading, Pennsylvania that I met, he was a Democrat and he won in a Republican area, Russell Brennan, because he was a sheriff and somebody did some nasty crime and they arrested a dude like right away. And they did a beautiful job. And so this guy, bigger than me, 6'5", redheaded guy, good-looking guy. He gets elected, right? In Reading, Pennsylvania, which I guess is Rock Rib Republican. And he said, he was saying that, yeah, you know, when it came down to gays in the military, it was a totally anti-gay area, right? So Rasty says to him, you know, just vote for it to come to the floor, and once it gets there, vote against it. I don't need you on this one, and make yourself happy at home. So, I mean, you know, I mean, how much of that goes on? Or does it go on like, I don't think it goes on like it used to.
I don't think it goes on like it used to because we see so much hesitation on Republicans right now, especially Republicans, to block things and block the votes for filibuster, to even go forward for debate. So I think it happens less likely, but you're right. I remember times when Rostenkowski and others would tell somebody exactly what you said, vote on the procedural matters, and if it comes to a full vote, then you can vote no, because at that point we just need a majority. We don't need the supermajority. So you'll be free to vote for conscience or vote in accordance with the wishes of your district. Just get me over the hurdle, and you see that less and less. It's also interesting, you know, there have been a couple of articles lately on some of the U.S. Supreme Court justices, which are overtly going out and in their talks saying the Supreme Court is not political, that why is everybody looking at the Supreme Court in a political manner? And, of course, the reply to that is, well, look at how the court is currently constituted and going back against precedent or expanding certain things in the last few years as a result of what Mitch McConnell did in the last couple of years of Republican rule, when he put Brett Kavanaugh in there instead of Merrick Garland, and then forced Amy Coney Barrett onto the court in relatively short order right before the election. And, you know, the argument that the justices are trying to make is that there's nothing political about their role or the Supreme Court role flies in the face of that. McConnell has gone on record lately of saying that he might even try or would stop another appointment if Biden tried to put an appointment on the Supreme Court right now. That's, you know, that begs for the argument that everything is political in the courts, which are supposed to be neutral. You're supposed to find legal minds that are fantastic legal minds that could go either way. You mentioned before about the court's decisions ideally should be 9-0 on all the issues, but they're not. They're either 6-3 or 5-4, and they're aligned with the Bills versus conservative justices in most cases.
Well, I think since you and I can tell, I would bet with 90% certainty you and I could talk, well, just once in a while, you can tell how everybody on the court's going to vote. Why can't we just fire them and pay you and I, you know, $10,000 a month to just make listen to the case and say, well, this is how this guy would have voted, and fire him.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need him. We know exactly what they're going to do. The only guy, I don't think you know what Roberts is going to do. The rest of them you do.
That's true. Although there have been some votes lately where the alignment has been surprising.
Didn't say we'd be 100%.
Yeah, and also, interesting, you know, usually the Supreme Court justice is, like the Chief Justice, in this case, John Roberts, usually has a lot more sway, but even he's been put into the minority. He's no longer the swing vote. Before, it used to be Anthony Kennedy, but you know, he could be persuaded by the arguments. There's nobody right now that really can look to a centrist role or a liberal role out of the last three or four appointments.
You realize what you just said? He actually could be persuaded by the arguments. He's the only one. That's pretty scary.
It is. But I, you know, he's the only one who could, you know, say, in a surprising vote, John Roberts voted with the liberal side, or in a surprising vote, he voted with the majority right now. I mean, he used to be, he was a swing vote for a while, and also persuasive, because, you know, it's typically referred to as the Roberts Court, because he is the Chief Justice, and he usually has much more sway in persuading some of the members, because as a Chief Justice, he really should be striving, and I think his personal beliefs are that he does strive for a 9-0 vote, or as close to a 9-0 vote every time, to make sure that people understand, yes, this really is the law, this is a legal interpretation that's correct and constitutional. When you keep seeing it, and this is the same argument hold whether it was 6-3 liberals in this majority or 6-3 conservatives in the majority. But when you see the same thing on controversial topics coming up, then that tells me that it's not really so much a question of what the law is, but who's making the decision.
Brennan, when on a personal level, you've known some of these guys way more than I have. At some point, we had a professor that talked about people under stress. And when you start getting stressed out, you first thing you do is become almost like a caricature of yourself. And then when it gets really, really bad, you do things that are totally opposite what you normally used to do. That's when you know you're really in trouble, stress-wise. Mm-hmm. But at some point when these guys go, they get their interview, and everybody talks about their background and all the other kind of crap. But then they have the big interview basically with the president behind closed doors, where I think they all did it. I'm not going to blame it just on him. I think they're going to grill these guys on what their feelings are on the hot button issues of the day. And I think the goal is for whoever the president is, that long after he's croaked, that there's somebody or somebodies really in charge in this country that would feels the same way he does about whatever it is. I mean, it's come to that, like you're saying. And those guys get out, and of course the first thing they say is they haven't prejudged any particular topic, when you know they've been quizzed for 2 weeks by the party in power as to how they'd vote on something. So they start out their lifetime career in probably the most important job in the world with a fat ass lie. All right. So as you go through this, and at some point, I mean, do these people even realize that other people look at them and say, I can't believe a word this guy says? I mean, when Nancy Pelosi or McConnell get on TV and they try and give you that, well, quite frank, do they realize that they've become a total caricature of themselves and everybody looks at them and all? If it wasn't sad, it would be laughable. I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, do they have any idea that they've become that, or they don't care?
I think it's that they don't care, that they still have to hold that position in public, even though it's a bold-faced lie, and most people understand that it's a bold-faced lie. And when we're talking about things like the decisions with the Supreme Court, you know, I think this goes back to Robert Bork in the late 80s, early 90s, when he was up for nomination for the Supreme Court and was denied because of all the writings. The senators knew what his position was going to be on a lot of decisions, and he was rejected from the Supreme Court. And, since that time, the justices, when they're sitting for their appointment, had become more circumspect. Instead of giving an answer on what they thought or grilled on something that they've written in the past for a legal article, the question is, well, you know, I don't deal in hypotheticals. I will follow the law when it comes before me in the Supreme Court if I'm appointed to the Supreme Court. But that's code. That's code for saying, you really know how I'm going to vote because of my history, and I don't need the answer. I'm not going to put myself in a controversial position right now by saying something in front of the Senate panel before my confirmation.
Well, plus, I just told the president behind closed doors exactly how I'm going to vote.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not like you can't change. But I mean, when you
look at people like Kavanaugh and Gorsuch and Amy Coney Barrett, they were on the Federalist list, a very conservative one who wants extreme justices, very accomplished justices, but ones who have a very conservative approach. I personally don't think that Donald Trump spent the time to investigate any of his picks. He just said, I want somebody who's going to appeal to my base, and the you know, the people in my base tell me that this is somebody who will take a far right position and appeal to the people that I want to appeal to.
Well, I think Mr. Weber, you know, once in a while actually does something pretty spectacular. And the one day, I don't even remember it. Sorry, Manny. He came out with a thing about how many in what states how many people vote for a senator in other states, and how the population. Mm-hmm. And I believe, Maddie, you expanded it to where if you take this, you know, two senators in every state, regardless of the population, that's not, you know, I think that's not a horrible deal. It's not the best, but it's not a horrible deal. But the fact now that those guys that are elected with way less part of the, can now put people in power that might last 50 years or 40 years.
That's right.
I think the way the Supreme Court has gone right now, you know, we need a constitutional convention, and I think these people need to be re-upped every 10 years or something. I don't, the lifetime thing, the way it is, as crazy as we've become, we got no business putting anybody anywhere for life, I don't think.
I agree. It has changed completely, and I agree with the research. I think that what we're looking at right now is minority rule.
Right.
One example is if you look, two examples. One is you look at the change in the public attitude nationally on gay rights and gay marriage, where that was in 1990, even in 2008 when Obama was first elected, how things have changed in the acceptance of gay rights and gay marriage compared to where it is now. And the same thing is even true with abortion. You know, the polls are showing that there's a much higher percentage now of people who are in favor of some type of pro-choice legislation, and yet you're seeing draconian actions by states like Mississippi and Texas and others. And you're absolutely right, and I agree with that because I've done some of that research too, that the amount of people who vote for the senators, when you look at raw numbers, how many people vote for Republican senators and how many people vote for Democratic senators, when you're looking at the states that are two versus two, or one versus one.
Brandon, we're gonna have to.
We're gonna
have to finish the rest of this next week, but, or who knows? Maybe this week. Well, anyway, have a nice. Where are you? Michigan? Are you here?
Across the pond.
All right. Well, have a good week, buddy. SP futures down 38. Yikes. NASDAQ futures down 236. That's a big number. Come back, Mr. Joel O'Connor.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Garson jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ollies, Mr. Merrill Weber on the board. We have S&P futures down 38.75, NASDAQ futures down 248.50, so that's like 1.5%. That's the big mover. Dow futures down 170. So whack whack. Not good this morning. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 203, 1.3%. FTSE down 32, that's only 0.5%. CAC, however, down 109, that's 1.7%. So they're the leader over there. The, in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 56, only 0.2%. Shanghai is actually up 19.5%. Hang Seng was up 291, 1.2. The market was virtually unchanged when I went to bed last night after the football game. So this all happened, like, after midnight. Whatever difference that makes. Dow Jones up yesterday, up 71. S&P down 12. NASDAQ down 77. So we had a pretty mixed bag yesterday. The interesting part was the Russell was up like $3 yesterday, which is really weird because the Russell was flying. Bonds, and here's the, I guess, the news or the culprit. 10 years up 0.05 to 1.54. Highest we've seen it in like a real long time. The Bund, positive 0.04 up to minus 0.18. Who knows, they're making a run towards zero again. Japan, wow, up to 0.07%. We haven't seen that in, I'm going to say, years and years. Oil, up again, 65 cents, 76 cents. Oil's up roughly $10. Maybe, what is this, 2.5 weeks? It's down to 67, and we were wondering if it was going to keep going lower. Now it's had this huge turnaround. Brent up 44 cents, 79.97. We were talking about, were we going to get $70 Brent again, and now we got almost $80 Brent. A natural gas up 53 cents. Look at this number, 624. That is unbelievable. It was 480, I'm going to say, last Thursday. RBOB, 222, actually sort of unchanged, which is surprising. Gold, however, going the wrong way, if you're bullish. Down $19, 1732. Silver down 51 cents, 2218. Copper down 4 cents, 424. Not sure why that is, but I haven't been sure why that is for quite a while. Crypto, Bitcoin down another $1,000 to 42,012. Crazy numbers, Matty. What do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. After a crazy traffic day yesterday, we're off to a great start here on a Tuesday morning. No issues on the Edens. Traffic building on the Kennedy, but no accidents to report. Same for the Eisenhower and Stevenson. Southside expressways are looking good. Off the expressways, one crash in the area. It's out in the western suburbs, Ogden Avenue at Wolf Road. But everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, you'll notice it's substantially cooler today than it was yesterday. Yesterday we were in the mid-80s, and then the temperature dropped in the evening, and today will just be a high of 69 today with lots of sunshine. Should feel nice. Have your windows open. Right now it's clear and 64, going up to a sunny high of 69. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 88 today. Right now it's clear and 74. In sports, White Sox topped the Tigers yesterday 8-7. Cubs were off. They're at Pittsburgh tonight. That's a 5:35 Central Time first pitch. Diamondbacks were off as well. They're in San Francisco to take on the Giants at 6:45 Arizona time. Lastly, Monday Night Football, not much of a game last night. It was the Cowboys blowing out the Eagles 41-21. Chief.
I've got Joel, how are you?
Doing well, Chief. How you doing today?
Rumor has it that you're long about position limit long natural gas futures. Is that true?
Yeah. I wish I could say the same thing, huh? Highest level since, November and December of 2018. Worldwide energy crunch, Chief. China, you heard what's been happening overseas in London. Not good if you're head of the Fed and you're saying there's no inflation and not higher prices in commodities.
I've got the 22nd of March of this year, which is what? April, May, June, July, August, September, 6 months ago, 242 on natural gas. And that's now you and I were doing the show what, a year ago? Year and a half? You know more about these numbers than me. Natural gas, we were awash in natural gas. We had tankers lined up ready to go to the refineries. We couldn't put them in there. What exactly has happened, Joel? This is way too soon, way too fast. Is it a dollar phenomenon or is it an oil and gas phenomenon?
I'd say, maybe a little bit of combination of both. You know, there's just, I think it's more like on the transportation. I think that the supplies are out there, just lack of workers, lack of truckers, you know, getting them to the place. And that's where you have the delays. And I think you're seeing that in gasoline prices in Europe, and I know across the United States. So for me, I mean, perhaps the supply is still out there. And the demand is certainly increasing coming out of the pandemic. But you're not getting the supplies to where they need to go. And those that pay the most for the shipping costs are the ones that are receiving it. I don't see any huge shift in, how we're using these resources. Maybe there was some undersupply, from the pandemic. But man, it just seems like a lot of things that are pointing in a negative direction, but it feels that we have pulled off the highs, but the market just seems to seem pretty resilient. Obviously today, under pressure in the index futures, but overall, still at lofty levels.
Well, we have, according to our little chart here, from going back to, say, August of 2020, well, let's go to the end of 2019. We actually have 4 million people less employed. That's the ones we count, all right. And we've got 5 million more people in this column of we don't know what the hell they do. 4.5 million. Well, I mean, it could be students, it could be something. They're not unemployed, they're not working, but the numbers we're getting are, you know, we used to have 157 million people working, 157.5. We had 6 million unemployed, and we had 95 million people that weren't working. Now, whether they're in school or in pension, God knows what. So those numbers have swung, but now we've got 153 million people working, which is 4.5 less. And we've got 100 million people in this other column. So we now have 4 million people less paying for 5 million people more on the other side. Those numbers are pretty awful. I mean, we have less people, but I don't think we're counting, Joel. I think in Chicago we have an awful lot of people that we weren't counting. We counted them more lately because you didn't have as many illegals working at country clubs and restaurants and stuff as you did years ago. But I think a lot of those people are just plain gone. I mean, because the quantity, the demand in Chicago has to be appreciably less for restaurant workers than it was a year and a half ago. There's no business in any of the convention centers. I mean, there's a 25% of the restaurants have probably closed and never open again. So how the hell can you have a labor shortage unless people are just plain gone? I mean, have you gone?
Like, back to Mexico, back to labor force, or God is in.
I mean,
no
I think,
longer with us.
I think maybe back to Mexico. Maybe people weren't waiting on the sofa 18 months for a $10 an hour job, and they're in Florida, they're in Texas, they're someplace. They're not here.
From what you told me about Chicago, I mean, like when I was there, I saw a much different picture, I mean, you're hearing, in Michigan Stadium, they're like, hey, longer lines to get in, longer lines at the concessions because we don't have enough workers. So I guess they're just gone. They've gone to other places. And I doubt they went back to, where they came from, but all I have to go is they're gone and they don't want the jobs that are available.
Well, that's right. And
they're living off the benefits that they had.
Well, I was looking at the problem in Long Beach. All right, now and to me, all this kind of comes together, Joel, and I think you somewhat think the same way, scary as that may be. But they talk about Long Beach and how there's rail issues. Well, if you cut back on the supplies for a while, and then all of a sudden you're working, 100% of capacity, you burn people out. Now, they claim they can't get them to the rails as fast as they're supposed to, so now all of a sudden you need all these truckers. Well, one of the problems, Joel, but, tell me your take on it, and we'll talk a little about football in a second, but is we're changing policies so rapidly in this country that nobody can invest because you don't know what a year from now is going to bring. I mean, I think. Or, and does somebody really want to become, to quit his job, go to truck driving school, become a truck driver only for 2 years from now saying, ah, man, it was a temporary thing, we don't need you anymore. I mean, we're seeing so much of that, start and stop. I think it's totally screwed people over. I mean, you seen the same thing? You seen something different?
No, I think, you know, there's been a major change, and that has been, you know, brought on by the pandemic and, the actual COVID itself. You know, one thing that I've been consistent with is pandemics don't last a year, right? They take, you know, there's never been a pandemic that's only lasted a year. So that you're just talking about the medical portion of it. The shocks and reverberations in the economies, I mean, the worldwide disruption for that period of time, I don't know how long it's going to take to get back to normal, or are we just going to have to adjust to a new normal? And I think that I totally agree with you. I mean, I think things have been turned upside down so much, one, from a medical standpoint, but two, from a economic standpoint. And that's, you know, not even thrown in, a situation with China and, international tensions, chaos, within, the United States as a whole. So a lot of negative things out there, Chief, but man, this market, and then the things with the Fed governor stepping down like that. I mean, you can't tell me that that's a good thing when you have two Fed governors step down in one day, So I'm very cautious, now. I always have been, and moving forward. We're in a turbulent period, and I'm not sure how long it's going to take to get out of it. If we start getting some really high inflation, and you know the first time that the Fed does make a move, the reason they're not doing it is it's going to crush the market, at least on a temporary basis. So, man, the Fed's stuck between a rock and a hard place. I think Powell's just trying to get to February, next February, so he can scoot out the door. And see what the other two guys did, whatever their trading matters are or not. But I'm sure they're glad they're out of there.
Well, you can't tell me that they don't know that their stuff is tradable. That the announcements coming out of the Fed is tradable when they're trading themselves. At least I know they're not as dumb as some people might have thought they were. Now it's okay for other people
too.
All right, Joel, take care of yourself. Talk at you next week, buddy.
All right, go Bill.
S&P futures, we've rallied back to only being down 30-31. Same thing with the NASDAQ, only down 205 instead of 250. Be right back, Mr. Kenny Polcari.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again. Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley. Mr. Brent Weber on the board. S&P futures down $30.50. NASDAQ futures down 207. That's better than the 225 or 250 was a minute ago. So we're actually, we got a few dip buyers here. Kenny, are you furiously buying the dip, or what are you doing over there?
Nope, not at all. Not buying this dip yet, because I think there's, you know, we're coming into the end of the month, right? It's according, it's because it's the end of the quarter, it's also the marking period. So I think that there's more volatility to come in the next couple of days. I'm not running away from it, so it's not like I'm hitting the sell button. I'm just sitting pretty and I'm going to hang out. I've got some protection to the downside, so I feel okay with that. I'm going to just sit and wait, because over the next couple of days, you could see some, you know, outsized reactions in the market. And if they get really outsized to the downside, would I jump in? Yes. But today, not yet, because I think this is just the beginning of a little bit of a rumble over the next couple of days.
If, quick question, if rates keep going up and at the end of the month we're 2% 10-year and the market's down, the market's down 8%, is that a buy the dip, or is that just a reprice and you got to live with it?
Well, so here's the deal. First of all, I do think by the end of the year that rate's going to be more like 1.8. I don't think we're going to hit 2. We could. I don't think we're going to hit there, but I think we could. Now, that's going to absolutely put a cap on equities completely. It'll certainly take some of the high-growth names down a little bit more. And at some point, that will create an opportunity. But I guess it's going to be the tone that we get. Listen, Jay Powell's going to Congress today talking about, you know, Fed stimulus to COVID-19. But notice he's also going to talk about inflation is no longer, they took the word transitory out of his conversation, out of the narrative. He didn't say it once in his FOMC speech last week. And now the headlines this morning suggest that now he's discussing that maybe it's going to be around for a little bit longer, which is very interesting, because how long have you and I been screaming about it? It's all baloney anyway about it was being transitory. But one or the other, I think that's going to depend on, are we going to start the taper? We're not going to start the taper. What does it really mean for inflation? Because if inflation runs out of, if inflation really spikes and runs out of control, they are going to be forced to do something with rates. And then I think you get a further price revaluation. So I think that, you know, I think the time is tenuous ahead of us, but it doesn't mean panic. It just means you're going to take it all in. But no, I do think if we go to 1.8 and the market's down 8%, I still think there's more to go. So I wouldn't run right in. Certainly you can buy stock on the way down. You don't have to be aggressive. You can let it come to you if you're a long-term investor. There's nothing wrong with that. But I wouldn't be so quick to be so aggressive.
Why, I think that you use the term panic. I don't think that there needs to be any kind of panic across the board. But if I had a concentration issue in my five stocks and I had $2 million and I had $400,000 each in five stocks that were 50 times revenue.
That's a problem if you're concentrated, but that's a problem anyway if you're concentrated, right? So you shouldn't be too concentrated. So if you are, you're going to have to tweak that a little bit and get unconcentrated.
Well, what I'm saying is if you're
concentrated in the fangman.
But an awful lot of, let's say, younger investors, Kenny, not necessarily, you know, my clients in some of the places I do stuff there, they have real aggressive parts of the portfolio, and I handle the protected part. But if your concentration is in all the huge winners of the last 2 years that are all, you know, 40 times revenue and four zillion times earnings, I think you have a very serious potential of those things dropping 60-70%. It's not going to be 5%. I don't think.
No, I agree with you 100%. But again, if you're 30 years old and you have a high concentration in the growth things, let's say, okay, maybe not the brightest move you'd make, but I get it, because you might have 30 years to go, so you're not really that concerned about it. And if they drop 50 or 60%, you're happy to buy more, as I would be happy to buy more down 40 or 50 or 60% for sure. But it's one thing if you're 30 years old and then that happens to you, versus if you're of our generation and that happens to you, right? That's already happened in 2007 and 2008. I'm not prepared to let that happen to me again, so I'm not over-concentrated. Right. Do I own them? Yes. Am I going to go out of business if they get hit? No. But I'm not certainly over-concentrated. Nor would I suggest that anybody, you know, in the baby boom generation should be over-concentrated. But look, if you're 30 years old and you want to be over-concentrated, go for it. You've got a lifetime ahead of you. I wouldn't necessarily tell you not to. I'd just say, understand what you're getting yourself into. That's all.
Well, I would be a little bit more cautionary in the sense that whenever anybody talks about you know, going back to 2000, which is not a long time ago, right? The issues in 2000, people will say, well, the market came back. And of course, you know, I got to throw cold water on that anywhere I am, which probably why I don't get invited anymore. But I'll say, okay, the market came back, but those stocks didn't. The only one that did was Microsoft.
Right.
The rest of them are still lower than they were in 1999. Really? I mean,
you're probably right. I have to go back and look and see. You're right.
Well, the fangs of the day were Intel, Oracle, Intel, Oracle, Cisco, Microsoft, and was it Dell, the last one?
Dell, yeah.
And I'm thinking those five stocks, the only one that's above what they were at the time is Microsoft.
Right.
But my point is that, you got to be real careful if they, you know, I'll pick something I think is kind of high, but I don't short it, don't do anything on my advice. I think Zoom is pretty high. Okay?
Yeah.
So the market could collapse, or it could keep going up. I'm saying the market could collapse, and 10 years from now, the market's way higher than it is today, and Zoom could be still 10 bucks. I mean, don't assume what you own is the market, right? A lot of people do, though, right, Kenny. It's a problem.
Yeah, no, I agree. But again, that goes to doing your analysis on your story. If the story has fundamentally changed from why you bought it, then I'd say, yeah, you either have to do something with it, you either have to jettison it, or you have to be prepared to, dollar cost average down if you love the name so much. But if the story has changed from your original thesis, then why own it, right? Well, if it's not the same story as why you bought it, and it's a negative story, then why are you going to own it anyway, right? You get rid of it.
Well, Kenny, I'm going to ask you, I know you deal with a lot of, I'm not saying this nastily, the higher end dudes. I mean, do you deal with a lot of retail people, or have you?
Retail, yes.
Okay, well,
in my prior life, I was an institutional broker, so my clients were all institutions, hedge funds, mutual funds, pension plans. But today in my life, as the chief market strategist at Playstone Wealth, you know, my contacts and my daily relationships are at the retail level. Now, they might be high net worth, high net worth, or they might just be, middle class, but they are retail people.
So what do you do when you sense this, and it's really difficult for me to have this conversation, because these are people you like, and you're not their investment advisor, so you don't, first of all, you don't want to give investment advice to people that aren't paying you, for one. I mean, real investment advice. But I've sensed it my entire time I'm in the industry, is that somehow people feel they owe these stocks something.
I agree, but that's when you get married to them, right?
Yeah.
Although I'll tell you this, I am married to my apples. I'll die with my apple. I'll pass my apple on. So, yes, I am married to that one. But there are other names in my portfolio that I'm not married to. But Apple and J.P. Morgan are two names that I'm married to.
Well, you like the company, you like the stuff, I'm going to say that there's a price at which you're going to be, you'll unmarry for a while, or you'll certainly protect it.
Right, correct. Well, you would protect it. Correct.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily have to get rid of it, but you can protect it. I guess at some point, listen, I guess at a price, everything's for sale.
Yeah.
So I just haven't, for me, that hasn't happened yet, but who knows? It could happen in the next number of years, whatever it is. But in my mind, those aren't names that I would sell. Like, I'm married to them, I love them, that's it. I just hold them and they love me, right? But there are other names that maybe not so much.
Well, it's a fine line. It really is a fine line. I mean, when I ask the question, well, if I gave you, $500,000, would you put it all in this stock? And the answer is no. And I said, well,
absolutely not.
Yeah. So if that's the answer, yeah, but it's, the stock's been good to me. You feel like saying, the stock doesn't give a rat's behind about you.
that's right. Yeah. If you put it all in that stock, you have to look at what it does to the overall portfolio. There you go again. Are you way overweight that name? And if you are, does that really make sense based on who you are? If you're 60 years old, it makes no sense. If you're 30, maybe it makes sense, because depends on the rest of you, right? But I would never say get so overweight in a name. And look, that goes right back to the guys at Enron, the guys at Bear Stearns. They were overweighted in Enron and Bear Stearns. All those people that worked there. They bought more. It was in their pension plan. They had it. They bought more, blah, blah, blah. And that was wiped out. Because none of them, a lot of them did not sell stock when they could and diversify away, right? They were way overweighted. Actually, it was their total portfolio, so they were only overweighted.
Well, yeah, well, but then again, these are stocks that, you know, General Motors, who would have ever thought General Motors stock would be zero?
Well, correct. That's right. I mean, that's right, but whoever thought Enron was going to be zero or Bear Stearns?
Well,
I mean,
that's true. I don't, but I'm saying you have, there is some feeling you have towards management that,
correct.
That the idea is they're not just going to pay themselves so far that they can't even stuff any more up their behind and buy stock back. I mean, what do you think, if we ever collapse, what's the blowback going to be on all the stock these idiots bought on highs?
Well, there's going to be a lot of pain, that's for damn sure.
But I mean,
buy them on the highs and they keep buying them, they don't do anything either to protect themselves on the way down or you know, revalue their portfolio, then whose fault is it? It's either their advisors or theirs.
No, no, I'm talking about...
So I'm not held responsible for you making a dumb decision.
No, no, I'm not talking about you and me. I'm talking about if IBM goes to, pick a number, if it goes to 70... Are the people, the shareholders going to walk in with rotten tomatoes to a board meeting and say, how much stock again did you morons buy at 150? Just to push
your
stock.
Oh, you mean, yeah. You mean like a stock buyback?
Yeah, why didn't you give me a dividend? Or right. what are you doing? I gotta believe if we go down, somebody's gonna remember, what did you guys do?
Yeah, no, I agree. I guess, you know, I hadn't thought about it like that, but I think you're absolutely right. That could certainly happen. And it very well might happen. Well, they'll just take the opportunity to buy even more at half the price, right? Because where's IBM right now? At 140, so if it goes to 70, they'll just buy double the amount.
Well, right, but why not give it? I think somewhere, Kenny, I've in the last, I mean, you could pick a date on this better than me. Anybody who thinks that these boards are working for shareholders these days, It's totally different than it was before. I mean, it needs to be in people's equation when they buy stocks. I mean, obviously, you and I, our life are stocks, right? We love it.
Yeah.
And so it's I'm not gonna trash the system, but these guys are doing their best to screw our system, I think. I mean, I don't think any of these people care about shareholders anymore. I mean, this management class, they think they own the place.
Yeah. I think yes, and I think that though comes with the, I think that comes with the environment, right? It's been easy money, it's been easy times, it's been low rates, and so yes, I think that has caused some to lose sight versus when rates were more normal, you know, 4 and 5%, they made different decisions than when rates are zero. And so I think that's partly what's going to change, and I get news to you. I think that's going to change sooner than a lot of people think.
Real last question, Kenny, these two guys quitting the Fed, is that a positive?
God. We could spend a whole hour talking about that.
Next week, when because it just happened, yeah, let's talk about it next week.
Rosengren is out because he's claiming kidney disease, completely trying to deflect the conversation away from his trading. And the other one, Bobby Kaplan, I mean, he's so arrogant, he stands up and says, yeah, I made millions trading my account and the FANG names and S&Ps and blah, blah, blah. But guess what? I get it all under the rules. That's bullshit.
Well.
Why, and we said this last week, why any of them are even allowed, Congress, Fed members, in the administration, none of them should be allowed to have a trading account, because God knows, if you and I had inside information and traded like that, we'd be sitting in jail right now.
Oh yeah, well that's because we aren't they.
That's exactly right, and that's bullshit. Excuse me.
Yes, that's all right. That's all right. Maybe one of these days we'll get to be they. You'll get there faster than me, that's for sure. All right, buddy, take care. SP Futures down 32, Nasdaq Futures down 222. Right back, Mr. Jeff Joseph.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hi, this is Audrey Johnson at Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Sellers, if you're wondering if it's the right time to sell your home, call me and I will be happy to provide you with a free market analysis and a personalized sales program for your property. I will help you get the right information to maximize your returns in this economy. Buyers, it is the time to look for the home of your dreams. What you couldn't afford 2 years ago is available now. Don't get caught in the rent price spiral that's sure to come. Plus, if you buy or sell a home from me at Home Source Realty, you will get a free 40-inch flat-screen TV at your closing. Call me at 708-349-3456 or email me at audreyjohnson@realtor.com for more information and details on this offer.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Something happening here.
Well, no pay Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Brett Weber on the board. S&P futures now down 33. NASDAQ futures down 221. So made it back to only down 200. Now we're sinking here a little bit again. We have Mr. Jeff.
You do. Good morning, Pete.
How are you, buddy? Just the man I want to talk to.
Uh-oh.
The guy who has his finger on the pulse of China and the rest of the world and whatever he's doing in this month's Luck Box, great mag. And we've got, first we hated China with Trump, and we were going to do something with them, and then all of a sudden we weren't buying stuff from them, and we were putting the tariffs on top of their heads, so we thought we could drown them, but we didn't. And now all of a sudden we got so much stuff coming from overseas, we can't get it out of the ports. We have nobody else who seems to want to make the move and make it here because they don't believe that it's long-term enough or something. And all of a sudden, we've got shortages every place, and we've got people we can't find. We don't know what the hell happened to them. We got 4 million people, it seems, that are no longer working. If you just look at the numbers we have, that doesn't count the people they can't count. So I'm going to ask you, what was the TV show where the guy goes, "What the Sam Hill is going on around here?"
Yeah, so in other words, China's a problem, huh?
Well, I don't know. That's what I'm asking you. Is it? Are they? Or I mean, is nobody? I'm starting to get the feel, Jeff, and I don't want to lob this one out there, but I guess I will, that people's inability to react quickly to changing the changing marketplace has been something that, you know, Maddie's had to listen to me here for 12 years. The ability of middle class people to see a need, get something to market quickly through a loan, through a building, through workers, through whatever. I think that whole thing is somehow broken. It has been broken for a while. Maybe it's student loan debt around people's necks. Maybe it's only big guys can get loans at the right. I don't know what it is, Jeff, but the inability to see. I mean, the simple truck driver shortage. I mean, Jeff, come on. You and I are not 40. We're not 15 anymore. Okay. This is one of the ladies who used to be a waitress over at Ceres. She quit because her husband got in the truck driving business and they were up to three or four trucks. You know what? If there's a truck driver shortage, you find three guys, you walk into the truck store, you buy three trucks, and guess what? They're on the road and you go. If you can get the credit, if you can get the, somehow or another, Jeff, that isn't happening. And the question, my question is, why?
Well, it's a big question, and you're right to look back and say that, you know, we haven't gotten China right since Nixon, you know, particularly Trump's tariffs. They failed to achieve the primary policy, you know. In fact, I saw a study not too long ago that basically said that although there was in the first year of the tariff, there was, you know, a decrease in the overall number of multinational firms that were operating in China. But over the next 3 years after that, it began to increase it as well. So it had a short-term impact. It didn't have a negative impact. And, you know, to its credit, it took a shot. But the policy objectives, the foreign trade policy objectives of the Trump administration were not achieved by the tariffs. And, you know, that's, he's certainly no longer running U.S. trade policy either. But, you know, the some of these tariffs on Chinese imports are still in force. And, you know, it just hasn't given us the leverage that we thought we would have over China in general. But, you know, they do have some vulnerabilities right now. It's clear that they have a coal shortage, but you know, we're not exactly queued up to be the people supplying coal to China. They're looking more at Russia and Mongolia and other, you know.
Actually, you know what, Jeff? You know what, Jeff? I think we are. We're exporting coal from Illinois to China. That's high sulfur content.
Yeah, no, we are, but just not to fill the primary void that they need. They need a lot of coal over there. They have a real coal shortage right now, and that's hurting their industry. And they have electricity shortages that, you know, are a result of this coal supply shortage, and power shortages occurring in general. You know, China's complex. We saw and talked about it briefly last week with, you know, the property issues that they have as well, and inflating the property market and encouraging speculation for a while and then backing off of that. I think the bottom line is, you know, Xi is taking what we're going to see, you know, as a forecast or prediction over the next couple of years. We're going to see an increasingly more authoritarian rule in China. You're going to see it in a lot of different ways. You're seeing it culturally. You know, you're seeing, you know, whether it's decreasing the amount of game time or their new stance towards, you know, effeminate males and things like that. You're starting to see a more authoritarian China on social issues that's going to creep over into Taiwan, etc. They're going to start asserting themselves because they're running into economic issues. And when you do that, you know, what those type of regimes tend to do is tighten up on their people.
Well,
I think we're going to see, you know, China emerge as the threat that, you know, many of us thought them to be.
If you could focus for a second, and I know I gave you such a broad question, like what's wrong with the world, and essentially welcomed you to start wherever you wanted to, which was great, by the way. But if you could focus a little more, let me go back and give the example of there was a family, this is a few years ago, they decided for whatever reason, maybe they knew you were going to write that magazine article, I don't know, it was before the magazine article, that they didn't want to buy anything from China. And they managed to make it, every time they went to the store, they made sure it was not made in China. And they managed to make it to May. And they had a lot of stuff they basically couldn't buy. But they worked around it. And they ran into a wall in May. This would happen to you because you're a softie. Guess what got them over the hump where they had to buy something from China? You're not going to make a stab.
Boy, that's a tough one. I don't know. I can't tell you.
The guy was, you know, he's a grandpa. You're not a grandpa yet. But if you promise the grandkids the blow-up swimming pool, and all of a sudden you went to the store and every one of them was from China, you'd cave. I'd probably cave, too. So they ended up buying the swimming pool from China because it was the only place in the world where they made the little kids blow-up swimming pools, and they had to buy one from China. Now we have had all the stuff that's happened the last couple of years, most of it, you know, that you guys wrote about and we've talked about and everybody else has talked about. Now, my concern is not that, let's say we put such a huge tariff on swimming pools that we're not importing any swimming pools from China. My concern has always been why, I'm going to say 25 years ago, Jeff, you and I would have had some old building, we'd have figured out someone knows how to make a damn swimming pool, and we'd have had, in 2 months, we'd have been making swimming pools. And somehow, that's not happening. And I'm wondering why. Is it because the you and I of the world, the young Jeff and Chief, say, why do we want to do this? Because as soon as we have the next election, the next guy's going to be back to loving China, and we'll be pulling them in from there like we were before. Is it inability to get financing? Is it an inability to see the market?
That's a really great question, and one that we've been looking into a little bit, too. It was prompted by another line of inquiry. But here's a possible answer, not the only answer, but it's definitely an answer. And that is the consolidation in retail that's occurred over the last decade. Top down, and the elimination of brick and mortar and smaller change means that you have consolidated buyers as well. And when you're, you know, whether it be you're buying for Costco or you're buying for Amazon, you're controlling large market share and large market demand from a bottom-up basis, so that there's more centralized purchasing going on and you're looking for big volume suppliers. So in the past, whereas on a regional basis or even on a local basis, a local manufacturer could have come up with plastic swimming pools to fund that demand, you know, for the state of Illinois. That's not the way retail works anymore. You know, Amazon and Costco are the major platforms, and they're going to look for, you know, fewer suppliers and narrower suppliers, and they're not going to accommodate the small manufacturer doesn't have the capacity to fill large orders. When you have a more fragmented retail environment, there was more of an opportunity for these indirect, these smaller channels, you know, direct to manufacturer from smaller retailers and smaller retailers that have smaller national footprints, but the consolidation of retail doesn't lend well to the mom and pop company that has limited capacity.
Well, that I'm going to say really, really, I think you're spot on there, and that really sucks because your first day you don't produce a million swimming pools.
Right. Well, that's what really sucks about Amazon is that, you know, we have this great convenience, and we've talked about this ad nauseum, but, you know, it's just one of the other unintended consequences of the convenience and next day delivery that Amazon provides us. You know, it's hurts supply chains, it's hurts startups, it's hurts small companies, and it's impossible to compete.
Well,
to manufacture at a small scale now.
But I think the, I use the word stench of what you just said permeates. I think that firm probably can't get a loan because the guy's going to go, you'll never make it, right?
I mean,
I think it works, but I mean, we should be asking ourselves, I mean, this is what I was talking to some Trumpies the other night, and I said, you know, I don't have any problem with a man calling out China after all the stuff they've done and are doing, okay? But not having any sort of regard to, you know, was the word in was it Shakespeare? You know, cry havoc and let loose the dogs of war. Well, if you don't have any idea what that's gonna cause and how you're gonna mop up the mess, you better keep the dogs of war in the house. You know, I mean we unleashed the dogs of war on China in a lot of ways without any regard to our capability to react to it or helping people react to it or having any concept of where this might lead. And I think that's very, very dangerous. I mean, we said, you were on the show, Joe. We said so at the time. You know, wait a minute, before you do this, careful, the can of worms you're opening up, you better have a worm catcher in the room somewhere, you know. And I don't think, I mean, I think we got people doing all kinds of stuff, but they don't know where the hell it's going. We got the Fed. The Fed, they're dying to make sure the market doesn't go down tomorrow. In the last 2 weeks, they put $130 billion into the system without any regard whatsoever to what that's going to look like 2 years from now. Now, here we are 2 years down the road, and we're going, man, this don't look so good. I mean, but it wasn't like it wasn't anticipated, was it? I mean, if you thought about it, was it?
No, not at all. Not at all. And then, of course, you know, the size of the proposed infrastructure bill, which is, you know, far in excess of the $5.4 trillion that it's been advertised as, is just going to be, you know, to add more fuel to that inflationary fire as well.
Well, what happens, Jeff? They pass the bill. Okay. Well, there's no way on earth, despite what, you know, they let Biden say, I let that one slip. There's no way on earth that he's going to tax, like you say, $5 trillion. There's no way that they're going to borrow from anybody $5 trillion, especially with China cutting back, right? So. They're left with the Fed essentially printing. The Fed, they're counting on the Fed being the buyer of the government paper. And first of all, what percentage of the population do you think, even as an idea, that's the two-step that's going on? I'm going to say 5%. Maybe not even that.
Sure.
So,
that's fair.
So if all of a sudden the Fed gets caught in their own underwear with this inflation, which it's going to happen in the next couple of months. I mean, certainly in the next 6 months. I've been wrong on the timing for so long, but I mean, it's right in everybody's face. And you know, you start talking about heating bills at $6 gas. Good Lord! But But the now the Fed is going to say we can't come up with the $5 trillion unless it's total funny money, and we're not going to come up with it. So all right, so the Fed says we're not printing the money for you. What happens to the bill, Jeff? I don't know enough about, you know, the way government deals with the money. I know about the money supply and stuff, but I don't know how the actual workings of the spending. They don't have it. If all of a sudden Powell leaves and somebody else comes in there, or you're forced to put somebody in there who has a little more spine, says you're not getting it from me. What happens to the bill? You've got a bill that says you're supposed to be spending, you know, $40 million on this railroad station, but guess what? The check's going to bounce. How does that even work? Do you have any idea?
Well, to be fair, the Biden administration is claiming, and the keyword, of course, is claiming that the bill is paid for, and it's paid for by tax increases.
Now, Jeff, you don't believe that in a nanosecond.
Yeah, the plan seeks to raise about $500 billion by increasing the global minimum tax on American companies, basically. And then the plan calls for another $80 billion to expand the size and power of the IRS, in hopes of collecting another $700 billion. So it has been the marketing and packaging of the plan that it may even use the expression, in one of the greatest moments of political expediency and disingenuousness, that it's a zero-cost plan, that somehow $5.4 trillion is a zero-cost, because, of course, you know, the plan is that taxes will offset this. The Congressional Budget Office, nonpartisan or bipartisan Congressional Budget?
It's supposed to be nonpartisan.
Yeah, they claim otherwise. They claim that it will result in an economic slowdown and it won't be paid for. But it is the plan currently, the packaging of the plan that it will be paid for by tax increases on corporate. Now, of course, that will result in the U.S. having the largest corporate tax rate among all developed countries in the world, you know, and same with our capital gains tax rate will be the highest of all. So, you know, whether or not that, and then, you know, contrast that to the tax decreases under the prior administration that resulted in record revenues for the IRS. So, you know, we have some recent data that everyone wants to ignore, but yeah, it doesn't paint a rosy picture.
You usually ask me these kinds of questions, and you sort of just did. Well, when they put something like this together, they've got this new math. You did the magazine talk about the new monetary theory. But one thing I don't know if I mentioned at the time, but I didn't because I would really like the magazine. You sort of missed the part where the new budgetary regime kind of came before the new monetary policy regime was that as long, this is the modern, who the hell put this together? It wasn't the guy from, New York Times. It was, you know, it was kind of the, Gail Braith and his son. I think his son was, his son's a professor at Texas A&M or someplace. This was in the Obama administration. The new shtick is if you put together a plan as useless as it could be, whether it's written on used toilet paper or not, if you put together a plan that says all you care about, Jeff, is if the growth in the economy is greater than the growth in the national debt. Now, obviously, the last year or two, we're going to blame that all on the pandemic. But what these guys are going to say going forward, okay, they're not going to come close to spending $1.5 trillion more next year and taxing you $1.5 trillion. They're going to say it's $500 billion we're going to tax. But oh, by the way, the $500 billion is going to give us so much more of a kick to the economy that it's going to increase our growth rate to 5 or 6 rather than the 3, which is total BS. We're never going to be at 5 or 6 real. We're too big for that. And nominal, yes, if we put enough money in, but not real. But nobody's making that distinction either. So the idea is if we extend it out to your grandkids' lifetime and our growth is going to be 4% and our growth in our debt is only going to be 3.9, it's okay, because 30 years from now or 40 years from now, it'll all come home to roost and we'll get it all back. That was in place long before the new monetary stuff. That's why
that's right.
There's people that say it doesn't matter what the deficits are if you spend it on the right amount and you're going to goad the economy forward. That's why, I mean, the libertarians.
That's how we got here.
But now if you listen to the Republicans siding with the libertarians, sorry to include you in this, their line of essential BS is that if you lower tax rates, somehow or another people are going to be more productive and you end up with more money. That never has worked, never will work. I mean, at some level, it might. If you go from like 90% down to 50%, yeah. But there's no way that you're going to drop from 32 to 21 on corporate people and say somehow or another they're going to use the 18% for not just paying themselves salaries or anything. They're going to use this for such incredible amount of research that they aren't able to do now, and this research is going to produce all this other crap, and oh, by the way, we're going to be so much better off, we'll have so much money. That is such a load. I can't go there. I mean,
let me, on behalf of libertarians everywhere, let me check that statement in one way. That is buying into the trickle down narrative.
I'm not there. You know that.
That libertarians, are often labeled with, and that's a red herring. That's a complete distraction.
Well, I do too. I don't think you guys would like that. No.
The bulk of the libertarian complaint about taxation is that it's funding an inefficient and bloated regime.
Oh, you're right about that. Oh, God, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So if you want to talk about taxes, I would simply say that 20% of every budget to every government agency could probably be cut without any impact of services because of the bloat in government.
See, I would.
It's more about that than it is about suggesting the trickle down kind of thing.
I love arguing with you. It's great because I learn so much. I'd want to push back on that one too, because I would do it differently. First of all, I'm going to say I think the government wastes way more than 20%. But
we got to start somewhere. You don't think we can take 20% off the military budget?
I'm going to say the way you're talking about it, I have sort of real issues with, because I would do it totally differently. I mean, that's why you and I should be in government together, because we could fight and then come out with a pretty good plan after we fought all night. One of my dudes at University of Chicago, and actually a guy at Notre Dame, both said that the dumbest management idea is to cut everybody by 10%. Especially if you just show up at a company at your first day, because you don't know any of your managers. He goes, probably there's people that you need to increase their stuff because they're working so efficiently they actually need a couple more people. There's some people that have way too many people and you can cut them by 50%. You know, by the way, there's probably a department you don't even need and you get rid of the whole place. So in order to manage properly, you should never do this across the board stuff. And I'm going to say, I would demand, my idea of the government, I would say this new consumer protection group, this is Elizabeth Warren stuff, I'd fire the entire group. Because everything, I'm sure there's very, when I say fire them, I don't mean that we're going to wing them in underneath the bridge. What I'm saying is everything those people do already was the job of somebody else. So, you know what I'm saying? It was already in the SEC. It was already in the Comptroller of the Currency. It was already in the Fed. They were supposed to be watching banks. We didn't need 15,000 other people, 15,000 desks and phones in another building to do the same job. So I would get rid of all those people. Now, if I have shortchanged the Comptroller and the Fed, which I probably haven't, now, would I hire 3,000 of those people, or the best ones, somewhere else because maybe they're not doing the job and he's the other guy? I would go about it that way, Jeff. I mean, I think there's whole departments, there's whole areas you don't need anymore. That's total duplication.
Yeah, but remember, that's an illustrative example. That's not actually a tactical plan. You don't take a straight slash of 20% across every budget. But
right.
these budgets are so bloated and so large, you could do that. It's just not, it doesn't seem like a prudent approach to take that kind of that great axe across.
But I mean, look at your.
It would never happen. It would never, ever, ever happen. You'd never see the mass layoff of government workers because they're a constituency. I mean, where would the Democratic Party be without teachers and government workers as a voting bloc?
You do realize that I was no big fan, but of the the only president in the last however many years that actually had less people working there, I think, I'm not sure about this, but quite a few people, they didn't grow anywhere near as fast, is when Clinton was in there. They actually did have layoffs.
Which is weird,
but what I'm saying, Jeff, you can't, as much as I agree with you, there's bloat in the military, but somewhere, just like these bills we just talked about with Brendan earlier, the these bills coming through Congress have way too much stuff in there, nobody knows what the hell's there, and it has nothing to do with infrastructure. I think somewhere along the line, the military budget, I'm going to say 50% of that is pensions and stuff for people who are, have been hurt in wars. Well, you can't, if you just do the math, which you obviously do all the time, you can't leave that 50% in there, because right now, if you cut them 20%, you're basically cutting every single new weapon because of the stuff you can't touch. I mean, these things have gotten so complicated that you almost somehow or longer you've got to tell people, which we don't, and I suppose you could find it, when you say military budget, here's how much for the people we have currently, here's how much for the people that are the Veterans Administration that are hurt from these wars and are walking around with prosthesis that cost, you know, $5,000 to throw. We're not going to cut that, I don't think. Plus, we're not going to cut Army pensions, I don't think. So let's take that 70% of the budget, or 60%, which I think it's up that high. We can't be talking about that, or otherwise we're not going to be able to buy a bullet. You know what I mean?
Smoking like a true politician.
No, what I'm saying is that let's at least understand what we're you know. Let's
what about the $90 billion worth of tanks, artillery, aircraft, assault rifles, 437,000 assault rifles that we left in Afghanistan? You think that was a good use of money?
Well, would I cut 20% of the current bullet budget? Yeah. But I'm saying these things that, you mean, you wouldn't even, unless you read them, and I don't do this, I learned some of this from Lou, unless you read this stuff, Jeff, you don't even know what the hell's in there. The stuff that's in various people's, I mean, you would never guess that food stamps are in the Department of Agriculture's budget. I mean, what are they doing there? I mean, right? I mean, I'm sure there's some history to it, but what I'm saying is, the way that these guys do it.
Listen, the frustration of this, for people like Trump, like Rauner, is as a businessman, you know, used to writing his own checks and balancing his own books and, you know, running their own companies. They know of loaded budget when they see it, but to your point, once you look under the covers, you realize how impossible it is to affect any change, right?
Well,
the military budget, we all know, is loaded. You know, the days of those $200 hammers and, you know, $100 screwdrivers. We don't know if that still exists because we have no transparency, but we do know that there is a military industrial complex that's being funded by taxpayers. It's going to the, you know, the Raytheons and the defense contractors of the world, and they're being paid a lot more than they need to be paid for what they're being purchased, and that all that to be negotiated. Those are the kind of wild-eyed naivety that politicians like Rauner and Trump both had, going in thinking that as a business person, knowing that they would never pay those bloated prices, that they could affect things. But
oh, you're right.
This is so entrenched in the system, they realize, no, it's not that easy.
Jeff, let's talk about this, because you're onto something that I think, it's a great topic. But let's do it after the break. SP Futures down 35, now back down to at least the lows that I've seen. NASDAQ down 225. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have S&P Futures down 37 now. NASDAQ down 240 as we get back to only down 30 and only down, 200 on the NASDAQ, and now we're back flying the other way again, which is not the best. We've got, I'm all over this. My page here has gone crazy because I looked up all those natural gas graphs, Maddie, and all of a sudden we went crazy on a thing here. So
charts.
Charts. That's right, charts. Where's our buddy when we need him, Kevin Reardon? why don't you do traffic weather sports while I corral my computer here?
I can do that. 36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're seeing some heavy traffic volumes here on the Edens and Kennedy. No accidents to report. But traffic is back this week. There's no doubt about that. Same for the Eisenhower and Stevenson. Southside expressways, traffic building, but again, no accidents to report, so that's good news. Off the expressways, we have a couple of crashes. Out west, Roosevelt Road, which is Route 38 at Lambert Road, there is an accident. Southwestern suburbs, I-55 northbound at Caton Farm Road, there's an accident on both shoulders, it says. That's way southwest near Joliet and in that area. And then far south side, LaGrange Road between Laraway and Nebraska Street is closed due to an accident. So we have some crashes in the outlying areas, but the expressways are starting to build up, but no accidents to report.
That's way south.
That is. Weather today, much cooler than yesterday, but still lots of sunshine. In fact, it's beautiful out there. Sunny with a high of 69. Right now it's clear and 64 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 88 today. Right now it's clear and 75. In sports, White Sox topped the Tigers yesterday in a makeup game from last week's rainout. 8-7 was the final in that
one. They had a fight, too.
That's right. Cubs and D-backs were both off. Cubs are in Pittsburgh tonight. Diamondbacks are in San Francisco. Lastly, Monday Night Football, it was Dallas blowing out the Eagles at home 41-21.
Can you think of a sadder sack game than the Pittsburgh Cub game tonight?
It's pretty bad. Two of the, you know, seven or eight worst teams in the league, literally playing out the schedule.
I'd much rather go out and see the Mudville Nine, your team.
Well, I bet you could walk up and get a ticket for $10 at arguably the best stadium in baseball. It might actually be a decent night. Just walk right in and go to Pittsburgh, have a hot dog and a couple beers for $10.
Now, you realize what he has just done, Jeff? He's given me a chance to say, how old are you getting to be? You can't buy a ticket anymore. Even I know that.
Yes, you can.
Where?
Anywhere.
For $10.
For $10. I bought a Cub one the other day.
Nobody has a ticket. How do you buy it?
They transfer it to your phone.
I don't have a phone and I know how to use like that.
Well, that's your problem.
I don't want somebody messing around my phone.
They don't touch your phone. You download the app, they send it to you, and it's done.
I'm talking about you walk up there, and it's a guy sitting there. I got four tickets because I'm the only one who's here dumb enough to come here. I got three extras.
Those days, I would like to see come back, but they used COVID as the reason to get rid of it completely, and I don't know if it's coming back.
Thank God for COVID.
I will say that people were getting ripped off left and right for big games because of counterfeit physical tickets, and so now they've eliminated the counterfeiting at least.
I almost was going to say, I'm sure some people, unfortunately, probably actually do think, thank God for 9/11, because they've got contracts that they never would have got before that. Anyway, Dow futures down 130 over in Europe. We've got the DAX down 146. That's a full 1%. FTSE only down 1, which is weird, which is flat, obviously. CAC around down 93, 1.4%. We've got Nikkei down 56. This sell-off here obviously happened after these guys closed. Nikkei's only down 56. Shanghai is actually up 19.5%. Hang Seng up 291, which is 1.2%, even though they've been down just about every day lately. Yesterday, the Dow was up 71, and the S&P was down 12, NASDAQ down 77, and the Russell was way up, so it was a very odd day yesterday. Bonds, and here's where the news is. 10-year yield up to 1.54, that's up 0.06 in one day. The Bund up 0.04 to minus 0.18. I don't know how those guys are still negative over there with the inflation they have. I don't get it. But Japan up 1 to 0.07, which is high as we've seen those in a while. UK over 1%, 1.02. And we've been reporting those guys 0.84 for like a really long time. Oil up 44 cents, 75.89. Brent up 27 cents, 79.80. The last time we gave this report, they were over 80, I believe. Natural gas up 39 cents, and this I want to talk to Jeff about. 609. RBOB unchanged at 222. And we have gold down 19 because interest rates currently are negative on gold, even though when interest rates were 15%, gold was at all-time high. So careful with that one. Silver down 49 cents. Copper down a penny. And we've got the crypto Bitcoin down another $1,000. 42,018. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
I already did it.
You did it. You know what? These guys are messing with me here. They changed their format right in the middle of the show. How can they do that?
Who's they?
CNBC. When I get all my foreign. Now you got some stupid arrows you got to hit instead of just clicking on the one you want.
You're talking about their website.
Their website. They changed it while I was looking at it, basically.
But you have all the fancy access websites. What are you looking at CNBC's for?
Because they've got all the European markets all real easy.
Yeah, that's true.
So Jeff, you get the feeling. I mean, you know, you and I can go back and forth on how we would, you know, mess with government a little bit. Obviously, look at, I don't know if you listened to the show yesterday, we John Flanagan and I went through the drop down in revenue in virtually every source of city taxes in the last year, and it's pretty brutal. I mean, they've got some of that. They got money from the federal government, printed up money they sent this way. Nice of them. I think what we're talking about is I think when I was young and naive, I thought that if things ever got bad, that even government would pull in their wings a little bit. I mean, for God's sake, if an asteroid hit a city, I think even the mob would give you another week to pay your debt, right? These guys, they're relentless. They think no matter what happens, they deserve to get paid even if they're working or doing nothing at home. I mean, it is absolutely relentless of what the city employees and people and their contractors think that they deserve. I mean, you mentioned this a bit about the Army. I'll bet one thing, Jeff, that if you put on a piece of paper and I would say a whiteboard and actually show it to the population, the money spent in Afghanistan, the amount given to private companies for laundry, you know, for stuff that people in the Army used to do making no money, I think people would be absolutely appalled at, like, the companies they paid. I think Halliburton was all over this, go figure, where they were providing meals, they were providing laundry. I'm not positive on the laundry part, but they were a big contractor, but it had nothing to do with oil. And I think that people would be absolutely appalled at how much outside people make in what used to be, quote, the military budget.
Yeah, and of course, that's second generation. You know, the big ones are Lockheed, Raytheon, and Boeing, of course.
No, but I mean, I think people get the idea that you're going to buy a plane from Lockheed or a tanker from Boeing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't think they get the part that you guys got guys making four times as much as the people in the Army cooking for people in the Army.
Yeah. Listen, you know, it was Bernie Sanders about, I don't know, a couple of years ago, what was it, 10% cut in the military budget. I think, my opinion is, the only place he felt good was that he didn't say across all budget, because I think, going back to your point earlier, that wouldn't be a tactical, smart way to do things. That's true on a smaller scale, but when you're talking about the billions of dollars we're talking about, I don't think there's a single top-line budget. One of the main vertical categories that could not be trimmed by that amount of money if there was, you know, some prudent manager. I mean, you know, they've done it. They've done the analysis in the military alone. You know, there's over a million. There's like 1.3 million active military people and about 800,000 in the reserve today. And if the Guard and Reserve grew from 800,000 just to a million, that means laying off, essentially, you know, reducing the size of the active military from 1.3 million down closer to a million and increasing the Guard component. That was supposed to save $30 billion a year. You know, just a simple thing like that. And then that was just one of many examples, actually, that Bernie Sanders put out. And he was on the right track, but it was, you know, he was also taking on the third rail, you know, and disingenuously not applying it across other budgets, you know, only across the military budget.
Well, I mean, are your two buddies, Simpson Bowles, are they even still alive?
Simpson Bowles, yeah, I think they're still around, right? Weren't they also part of that, boy, that was a classic. Remember that commission, I think, was it Obama that put together that group that came back with all the recommendations, all of which were ignored?
Oh, they totally ignored. Well, they picked two guys who were not going to. I'm going to. You know what? I could be totally wrong on this. If somebody knows, please tweet in. I think one was from one side of the aisle and one was from the other. Neither one of them was going to run again, I think. So they had no ox being gored, and they basically attacked everything. And one of the guys said, If you're not pissed off about this, you either didn't read it closely enough, or we somehow forgot about you, or something along those lines, because they basically every place they went, they found nothing but waste.
Yeah, that's right, and that was 2000. That was about 10 years ago. The Simpson Bowles thing, Bowles plan.
And like you say, not one piece of it ever went anywhere. You know, cause
they basically, the $4 trillion was the number that I remember that they came up with, which was, you know, that they would cut $4 trillion in spending.
But in terms of political power, I mean, right now, let's shift gears a little bit, because I think you have your finger on the pulse more than most on this. In terms of political power, right now, for this stuff to happen, for even the crap with the COVID, with the people saying that the regular people don't need these boosters, and all of a sudden, you know, all of a sudden they're the people that are obviously in their pockets stuffed by Pfizer are appalled by this, to where the president is like, where did that come from? A guy who's been doing nothing about follow the science, right? So now the lady who's the head of the Center of Disease Control essentially overrides the committee, and the president's running around. So I mean, it's, How is it, other than, you know, and I don't want to see this, I'll be long gone if it happens, when it happens, but I don't want my nephews and their kids and so forth and my nieces to have to go through this. Right now, it seems to be possible to me for several in Chicago, the big money people, clearly in Washington, the big money corporations, which are only getting more and more, they can bring way more political power to bear and really stupid stuff for their benefit than the rest of the people can. Even though the rest of the people have, you know, 300 million votes or whatever it is. It's somehow or another we the people cannot seem to get organized in such a way where we can tell Pfizer, take your money and get the hell out of town. We can't, because our elected officials have totally lost. They've been denutted. They cannot do that. They're totally caught up in this, it appears to me, to where a smaller and smaller number of people are actually running. How is it? How exactly can the middle class, which had some power for a while, mainly, I guess, through the unions, which really don't even exist unless they're government unions. How exactly, short of, a bullet revolution, which I don't ever want to see, how exactly do you swing that back? Or can you? Or do you need to go through a depression era where all these people with all this money somehow lose it, so they're like regular people again, which I don't want to see. How do we ever, I mean, whatever happens here, Jeff, every single month it seems to me to be getting worse. There's no way the city of Chicago is going to reform at all. I mean, in my opinion.
There was an opportunity. That's what's so unfortunate about the prior administration. I mean, he was positioned to do exactly the things you're talking about that nobody else had done before and kind of take it on because of that naive thinking that he came in with that, you know, the government's like a business and you can just change budget and negotiate things and do a better job. That was a raw energy that we actually needed, and unfortunately it turned out to be a greatly flawed narcissist, egomaniac, and, you know, and all the problems that we know about Trump. It's a shame because he had the right idea in terms of leadership.
Okay,
he was the only antidote to this type of, to these problems. No one else addresses. I mean, look what he did with the UN, or, you know, why should other countries not be paying? I mean, he actually did the right things. He was just the wrong guy.
Let me ask you this, though. First of all, you know, even though it's radio and I shouldn't agree, I agree with you. I don't want to be like a sports idiot and say 110%. So I'll say 100%. I agree with you 100%. But now my question is...
That's always bothered me, too, by the way. That 108% thing.
Yeah.
Right.
I agree with you 100%. But now my question is, what if it wasn't Trump? What if it was somebody that had the same sort of ability to insult people that deserve being insulted and institutions that deserve being insulted, but actually was smart enough to read up and know what he was talking about before he opened his mouth, and actually was a guy who was going to make change happen and didn't have all the personal screw-ups that Trump
has.
My question is, would the bureaucracy have listened to him anyway? When, even if he were the right guy, would they just say, he's only going to be here for 4 years, 8 at the most, we'll just outweigh him? Do you think?
Well, it's a powerful position with what he did with regulations, you know. You can get a lot done. And if he had another 4 years, he would have got a lot more done. But, you know, at what cost to our body politic? You know? That's the problem. A president with that perspective can get a lot done, and we never had an opportunity to elect one, and then we elected a flawed one.
Well, let me ask you a real simpleton question. We're not talking about federal bureaucracy. Let's say, for instance, and you take the tollways once in a while, I know, the easy pass thing. I think that when that was passed, the easy pass passed, that the data was supposed to be destroyed after, I'm going to say, a year. It was so long ago, and I remember at the time digging into this a little bit. Because you pay in advance, Jeff, you can't not pay them, right? And the idea of using this to watch your movements for your whole life on the toll road, and then they got a budget they have towers now that are not on the toll road to track you, with the idea that they want to know where you are when you're not on the toll road, because if there's an accident or construction, they want to know the other street. This is the BS we're given. Now, if it's in the law like I think it is, what do you think would happen? I mean, you're never going to get it out of Jay Pritzker, but say you're the next governor and you say, hey, guys, here's the rule. When it says we want it to be gone after 6 months, we don't want it in divorce cases years from now. We don't want to be tracking people and they don't know they're being tracked. We don't want any of this crap. Destroy it. Do you think there's a chance in hell, Jeff, that stuff actually is going to get destroyed, or somebody's going to take it home, or somebody's got it, or they'll hang on to it for the next governor or something? Do you think anybody would actually pay attention to you without going to their house, arresting them, flogging them in the street? I mean, do you think anybody will pay attention to you?
No, I think there's, it's not being cynical. It's based on some research we're doing for the current issue of Luckbox about data brokers and how the government has had to go to data brokers from time to time to buy data that they could not get companies to surrender. So if Apple had data about somebody on a phone that they wanted to, you know, use for tracking purposes, Apple would turn it over. The government's gone to data brokers that already have the data and buy it directly from them. There are documented cases of that, and that's become a regular practice. The short answer is, it's like what is always said about the internet. You know, once it's out there, there's never pulling it back. You know, once once those pictures of you in blackface at your high school prom, you know, 3 decades ago are, you know, exist, they're out there. Same thing with data. So that data that was accumulated by the toll rate system, that even if someone got back to government and said, all right, you got to destroy all that, it wasn't intended for that purpose, somebody else has that data already, and it's probably a broker who sold it 5 to 10 times over, either legally or illegally on the black market.
So would you, dark web. Now if you were me, and I'm kind of a, you can tell I'm sort of a son of an Irish cop, if I find the person in government who sold it to him, do I find the living crap out of him and put him in jail for 20 years? Do I make an example?
When was the last time that ever happened?
That's what I'm saying. It would be the first time. It would be the first time.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't mind being the first guy to do it.
Be held accountable.
Because you know what the excuse would be? 50,000 other government people have done the same thing. Why am I the only one going to jail?
Yeah, I could think of a good place to save a couple bucks in the military. Unfortunately, you know, and you're talking about jumping back to military, I was going to say, you know, fire Miley and save $200,000.
Yeah.
When I saw what he had done with Afghanistan and that call to China, which was completely against all military protocol, I don't care what, you know, what your partisan leaning is. If you don't recognize the problem in that, you're just a disingenuous partisan hack. If you think it's okay for a military leader to call a foreign military leader and say, oh, if we're going to attack you, I'll give you a warning first. I mean, that was the ultimate in hubris and bull. A man who does not deserve to be in his position. I looked up his salary. He only makes $197,000. So think about that. Think about how ridiculous that is. And I don't even like this guy, but how, you know, our general is making only $197,000.
Jeff, I'm going to say from my guys I used to have when they weren't working from home or not working from home, my friends from the Fed, I'm going to say every one of them made more than the governors. I think Powell makes like 150 or close to that, 200 somewhere in there. I mean, I've never looked it up, so I could be wrong, but it's not like 800 grand or a million. I mean, it's damn close to that. I mean, I could be wrong saying it's 150, but I don't think it's a mil. I mean, I bet he makes.
That's reserved for university presidents with, you know, billion-dollar endowments.
I'll bet he makes 1/100th of what Jamie Dimon makes.
Sure. Huh?
So then, so you, you, so you,
97,000 is General Milley's strategy or salary. Excuse me,
Maddie. See if you look up. If you got a second, see if you look up Jay Powell's salary. But I'm going to say that's why when Janet Yellen went out and made the 6 or 7,
203.5.
All right, that was close. That's close. What did I say? 150 or 200? How do you get the 203.5? Well, then you got the 3.5% last year raise. Was that it?
Could be.
The
vice chair makes 183,100.
And what does a regular governor get?
I don't know.
Probably a little less. But I mean, when Janet Yellen went out and made the $7 million, how Jeff could, does that not disqualify her for another job in there?
Yeah, right.
But I mean, these people, they don't have anywhere near the same morals that we do. We're along the line. How far up the chain do you and I have to get, which I'm never going to get there, how far up the chain do we have to get to where there's one spot and says, cross this line and you now become amoral?
I think that's a moving line. That's not a red line. And that line keeps moving.
Well, because we talked with Carl a lot when he put his, he helped his friend get a...
Morality is relative to you.
Boy, tell that to a nun with a ruler in her hand. That didn't work. Anyway, so next week, are we going to be able to talk about your new edition?
We're getting there. We're coming up to the wire. So next week will be our last week, you know, working on it, and it goes off to print. So if you want to get out in front of that, just subscribe for free at getluckbox.com.
Yeah, because some of the stuff that you've been talking about that's in there seems fascinating. So let's zero in. And these other problems, I think, we'll keep for a while. They're not going to be solved in a week if we don't talk about them.
I don't think so.
No.
All right.
Have a good week, buddy. S&P futures down 36 now, and it's the lowest I've seen them. NASDAQ futures down 229, right about the middle of where they've been. Not a good day so far. We'll see what happens. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.